Hello, this is Vicki Klosterhaus, and I want to welcome you to my series of podcasts where I have the privilege of interviewing women who are living a life that is undeterred. Today, our guest is Dr. Pat Hsu. A good friend of mine told me that she wanted to introduce me to Pat. She says, you're going to want to meet this woman because she's your kind of woman. Well, she was absolutely right. Not only did I appreciate that Pat was a strong woman who lived a life that was undeterred, I also found out that she was a fellow author. In 2015, Pat released a book called Driving in the Middle Lane, Business and Life Lessons from the Auto Industry. Now, you need to read her book. It's filled with stories about her three decades of working in the auto industry and what it was like to be a female trailblazer in a predominantly male work environment. The book is filled with humor and insight, and it's a great read for anyone, but I think especially for women, no matter your age or your stage in life. So, Pat, I want to welcome you. I really appreciate you taking time to share with my listeners today. So I want to start out with your book, Driving in the Middle Lane. Why did you decide to write your book?
Well, Vicki, first of all, I want to thank you so much for having me speak to your audience here, and thank you for that very kind introduction. You ask why I wrote the book, Driving in the Middle Lane, and I would have to tell you that I felt very grateful for the 30 years that I worked in the auto industry. I wanted to share some of the important lessons that I learned with other people. The bottom line is there were many things I knew at age 55 that I wish I had known at 25 and hoped that what I shared with others would help them along their path.
Yeah. I love the idea that you start off by saying you were grateful because, you know, when you start off with a positive attitude, I think it makes it so much easier to be able to walk through different situations. And your book certainly talks about some of the situations that you had to go through. Three decades ago, being a woman engineer looked a lot different than it does today. So what I'd like you to do is just give us a brief overview of what it was like when you first started and what helped you persevere in a male-dominated world.
Well, Vicki, when I started working in the 1970s, there were very few women working in auto plants, especially in salaried positions. One of the early factories I worked in didn't even have a women's restroom. So men were initially uncomfortable working with me, and I found it required just a great deal of patience and perseverance to help the men adjust to this changing work environment. They hadn't seen a woman working in their area before, and it was hard for them to adjust. But what helped me most was an internal sense that I had that doing this was really part of my life's mission. To help not only the men that I worked with, you know, understand that a woman could be capable as a colleague, but I also felt it was part of my mission to pave the way for other women who would come after me. And I think it was this internal drive, this internal prompting that really helped me through the difficult times that I faced.
I want to go back a little bit and talk about that internal drive. And here's what I want to ask you. Do you think that you would have been able to persevere and do the 30 years in the auto industry if you hadn't had that internal drive? And can you explain that just a little bit more to us?
Yes. I mean, basically, the internal drive, and when I talk about my life's mission and feeling prompted, it really was the spirit of God that I feel was within me telling me this is what I was supposed to do. And it's something that I think is important for people to realize that when you have this voice, this still small voice inside of you that is moving you in a direction, even a direction that people around you are telling you not to take, it's important to follow it. Because if you do, then what you're essentially doing is aligning your life with the will of God. And that's a very, very powerful place to be. If you feel that prompting and you feel it's coming from God, even though it's overwhelming and seems like it's too hard for you to handle alone, if you really believe and have faith that God is directing your life and you follow that, you're going to end up being just fine, being exactly where He wants you to be.
And you know what you just said is interesting, because we read in the literature that when somebody knows who they are, in this case you knew whose you were, that it gives you values and goals, that gives you a firm foundation that keeps you from tumbling over real easily. And that knowing your mission, knowing your values, knowing your goals, and where you want to go. And I think that's so important for all of us to remember. Well, one of the things I write in my book, and Undeterred, is about the importance of women being willing to take risks. And what research tells us that, in general, women are more hesitant in taking a risk than men are. So the first question I want to ask you, would you categorize yourself as a risk taker?
Absolutely. I have always been a risk taker. I think part of what happened to me as a child, I came very close to dying. And
wow.
I think if you go through an experience like that where you come close to dying and you really find that God pulls you through because he has a purpose for your life, you end up living a life where you fear less. You just don't have a sense of fear because you have faced death. And once you can face death, then any challenge in life is something that you know that you can handle. And so I think that, yeah, people would call me a risk taker. I would say that rather than saying that I'm a risk taker, I would say I'm somebody who's not afraid to do something difficult because I'm not afraid of failure, because I believe that in what appears to be failure, there is a learning that ends up setting you up for success later in your life. So
I have another question about risk-taking, but I want to go back to something that you just said. Is one of the things that we often teach our young girls is, and even our young men, but failure is bad. And I'm hearing you say failure is not bad.
It's not bad at all. In fact, we should take the word failure out of our vocabulary and call it learning experience.
Learning experience.
The only time that what the world perceives as failure is bad is if we don't learn from it. Then it's a waste.
Yeah.
But as long as you can learn from it, then you have to believe that what I've learned from this non-success is going to help me later on. And if I can share that with other people, it will also help other people later on.
So that's
my view on that.
And I agree with you. I think one of the things we need to do is teach our girls it's all right to fail. I had one young woman tell me that every night at dinner, that their father would ask each one of the children, "How did you fail today?" And the reason he asked that question was he wanted to learn that you need to be out there trying things and that failure's okay, because, as you said, failure is a learning experience that we can grow from. Well, let me back up to this risk-taking. I'd like you to talk to us about what were some of the biggest risks you've taken, and what did you learn from it?
Well, I'll tell you, that's an interesting question. I guess if I had to choose the biggest risk that I took, it was a risk that actually my husband and I took together when I decided to attend Harvard Business School in 1980.
Uh-huh.
When that opportunity came up, because of my husband's career and because he wasn't able to get a good job in Boston, we made the decision to have a commuting marriage. And we knew that was going to be a risky situation. We had two children that were 10 and 11 at the time, and decided that we would move the children with me to Boston and my husband would stay in Ohio and continue working there. And we knew we were going to be stretched relationally because of the physical separation, and that we were going to have to make an extra effort to stay in contact daily with each other. We knew we were going to be at risk financially because we were going from a family that had two incomes living in one house to a family that had one income living in two homes. And that was going to stretch us financially. And then, you know, professionally, whenever you step out of your career to spend 2 years in school, you're never really sure what you're going to come back to and what's going to be waiting for you. So all of those were risks. But as it turned out, we felt God really was moving us to do this, and it turned out beautifully. We ended up making a bunch of money on our home, so financially we came out in great shape. Relationally, we found out that, you know, John was talking to the kids every day on the phone, and that he actually got closer to them while he was physically separated from them than he was, you know, when we were all together. So I think we tried harder and relationally came out good. And then professionally, you know, I got a real nice promotion when I came back. So we took the risk, knew everything was on the line. But when you feel God prompting you to do it, if you follow your heart in faith.
Right.
The risks all ended up turning out great.
Wow. Now that was something. But what a wonderful opportunity for all of you. And we get nowhere unless we're willing to take a risk, and a wise risk. It's not like you said, foolishly, I'm just going to go do this. But it was something that was a team effort and that you thought through. Because certainly women always care about, or most women always care about how it's going to affect the family and those relationships. It was a great example. Well, I want to go back to my book again because I want you to respond to something else. I share in my book, Undeterred, that in general, men and women display confidence differently. Men tend to be more assertive, interrupt more, are more willing to talk about their accomplishments. And what I find really interesting is they're willing to apply for a job even though they don't meet all the qualifications. Where on the other hand, women tend to be we're more polite in our language, we ask more questions, we're more other-oriented, and we feel like that we need 100% of the qualifications before we apply for the job. So my first question that I want to ask you about this is, did you see these gender differences play out in the workplace?
Yes, I would have to say that generally, exactly as you outline in your book, I would say 80% of the time it's true. However, I found while I was working that there were exceptions on both sides.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I found that, for example, that there were some men who believed in always following the rules and wouldn't deviate. If there was a list of requirements and they didn't meet all those requirements, that there were 20% of the men that wouldn't apply. And on the other hand, you know, there were 20% of the women who were ready to break the rules and ask for forgiveness later.
Right.
And so I think, like I said, that generally those are true. And I think we need to encourage everyone to not worry if you don't meet all the requirements. Because as somebody who's been on the hiring side, I've put down lists of requirements, and it almost never happens that I get a candidate that fulfills 100% of the requirements that I put down.
Yeah, and one of the things I like that you just pointed out, because I did use the term in general, I think it's important for us to always remember that we can't say it's an absolute about anybody when it comes to self-confidence, and that we all fall somewhere on that self-confidence scale. So we might have a woman that behaves very much like we usually use descriptors for a man, or we might have a man that tends to, if we would look at descriptors, it's more like a woman when it comes to an attitude about self-confidence. And that's always important for us to remember. And that also helps us remember that we can always change. We can become more self-confident. Which brings me to my next question. What's one thing, and it's going to be a two-part question, what's one thing women could learn from men when it comes to self-confidence? And what's one thing men could learn from women when it comes to self-confidence?
Well, I think one thing women can learn from men is that men tend to keep getting up after they're knocked down until they finally succeed. I think they have strong egos that don't let them accept failure, and so they keep getting up. And one definition of success is to fall down 5 times, get up 6. So I think that there's a tendency there on the part of men because of their egos that they keep doing it. Women are not as ego-driven. And because it's not that important to their ego that they succeed, I mean, they'd like to succeed, but if they don't, the world's not going to end, that they often quit sooner than they should, not realizing that success might be just around the corner. So I think that you know, having that ability to keep getting up and keep trying again is something women can learn from men. Now, on the other hand, you ask, what can men learn from women? Well, I think men can learn to be open to different ways of thinking and realize that there is often more than one right answer. I think women are a little bit broader in their views of things, and they see that there can be multiple solutions to a problem. And so men can learn that. And I think men can also learn an important lesson from women in that it's important to listen and understand an issue first before springing into action.
Right.
Again, in general, if we look at 80% of the men, they tend to be action-oriented and they want to fix problem, even if they don't fully understand it. As soon as they get kind of the general idea of what's going on, they want to offer a solution. Whereas women tend to let's hear the whole story, let's look at it from all sides, let's process this and then make a good decision.
In my book, one of the things I write about is seeing coworkers, and I think that's it. We both bring different things to the table. So we can learn from one another and appreciate one another. And if we work together, then we accomplish our goals much better as men and women. So now I want to go back now to your book. And in the chapter, I read the chapter called The Systems Approach. Well, I read all your chapters, but A Systems Approach. And I love the story you wrote about that you moved from a blue-collar plant to a white-collar launch center. And when you started at the launch center, a female colleague came up to you and she said, now, in the blue-collar plant, men are going to openly criticize you, and that this is actually a blessing because you had been able to deal with it directly in the spot. But she warned you that in your white-collar setting, you would be surrounded by educated, polite men who would undercut your credibility behind your back. And if you did a better job than they did, it would threaten their manhood. So my question for you is, how did you have the confidence to deal with this attitude? And do you think we still find it in the workplace today?
Well, I will tell you that there are still pockets of of this attitude in the workplace even today. You know, attitudes like this are still prevalent, especially in areas that are, you know, haven't gotten to a point where there are a lot of women working there. But what I found, the best way to deal with men who are uncomfortable and feel threatened is to treat them with respect. Because respect is something that both men and women respond to very well. And if they know that they're respected, and they you see them as someone that you're going to go to for advice, that you don't publicly embarrass them, that you want to work with them. If you're a person who looks for shared credit rather than personal credit, you give credit to the team rather than grabbing it for yourself. These are all things that help men to feel a little bit more comfortable working with you and can see you over time as an asset, you know, to the organization.
Wow. I think you summed that up in one word, respect. You show it with to anybody, but I do think you're right. I think that that's one thing that men really appreciate when they're respected, as do women. Well, you talked a little bit earlier about your faith, but I'd like to ask you, maybe you can expand on it a little bit, how your faith has bolstered your self-confidence.
Well, for me, my faith in God has been the sole source of my self-confidence. You know, you really can't count on the praise or the criticism of other people. There's a great book written by Max Licato called You Are Special, and heroine in that story is someone who is unaffected by the praise that people give, and she's also unaffected by the criticism because she has such a strong relationship with her maker. And I've tried to live my life that way because I found that when we compare ourselves to other people, there's always going to be people who are smarter, more talented, better looking, that can make us feel totally inadequate if we do a side-by-side comparison.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, we're going to find people who are less intelligent, less talented, less attractive, and it can cause us to feel overconfident.
Mm.
So the thing is, never compare yourself to another person. See, your self-confidence is really knowing that God made each of us for a purpose, equipped us with the talents and attributes that were necessary to achieve that purpose, and that he's going to fill in any of the gaps that we have with either other people or ideas or things that he'll send us that fill in what we don't have. And then we have to believe that, you know, every mistake we make is going to providing us the necessary learning that will help us for our future success. So I think, you know, that's the key. Trust in God. Don't compare yourself to others.
Yeah, that's good. I loved when you said, knowing that God made us for a purpose, that it also fill in the gaps we have. And I'm thinking about going back to the Old Testament and thinking about Moses saying, God, I can't do this, and he filled in the gaps. And one of the ways he did that, he sent his brother Aaron to help him.
Exactly.
For him. Yeah, that's a great example. Boy, it comes back to that faith, doesn't it?
Yep.
Well, let's end our conversation today. I'm going to ask you to share some more wisdom and from your experience about the importance of building self-confidence. So what would you say to the women that are listening to this podcast and perhaps a few men is what's some words of wisdom about self-confidence that you would share?
Well, if I had to give a few suggestions, I guess the first suggestion that I would say would be pray and meditate every day, asking for divine guidance.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing stronger than aligning your will with the will of God.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can align that alignment and that, like I said, you're going to get the strength and self-confidence you need to get through your day, get through your week, you know, get through your mission. The second thing I would say is to believe that with God, all things are possible. You and God, you know, they say you and God make a majority, and together you can do his will. You know, alone you can't accomplish all that's possible, but with God you can, and that he is going to send you resources to cover any of the shortcomings you have. The third thing I'd say is that can be very helpful is make a list of all the difficult things you have ever done that others taught you could not achieve. Now, Vicki, I know in your book you talk about the importance of a gratitude list, and I believe in that very strongly, but I think that I have a list that I call an against all odds list.
Oh, I love that.
Whenever things happen that seem like it's against all odds, and I'm praying to the Lord for the strength and wisdom to know what to do, I pull out my old list, and I look back at things that happened 10, 20, 30 years ago that were against all odds, that other people said couldn't be done, that did get done with God's help. And that gives me the self-confidence to go forward and try what looks to be difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that as you look at that list, you know, thank God for his presence in your life, because I think that gratitude is an important element of self-confidence, because it's gratitude that keeps their self-confidence from morphing into arrogance. There's a line between self-confidence and arrogance, and it's only by feeling grateful to God that we keep in line that what we do and what we accomplish is really through his grace and not on our own talent. And then the last thing that I would recommend as far as suggestions on building self-confidence is to really recognize the value of yourself as well as the value of others. And treating each other with respect really helps foster an environment of self-confidence for everyone. If you can, you know, create a self-confident environment for the people around you by encouraging them, you know, that self-confidence will flow back to you as well.
Mm-hmm. Wow, those are some good things. Pray, believe that with God all things are possible. I love the against, make an against all odds list. I think that's fabulous. Gratitude, and when you said that, I was thinking how you started off the conversation saying, I am grateful, and then recognizing your own value. How important, and your value comes from God as well as the value of others. Great, great words of wisdom. Well, I want to give you a special thanks, Pat, for taking time to talk with us. I want to remind all of you that Dr. Pat Hsu's book, Driving in the Middle Lane, can be purchased at Amazon.com. So as we end this conversation, I want to wish all of the listeners a life that grows in self-confidence and that you remain undeterred.